This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hi, everyone. My name is Rowan J. Chetner, and welcome to Chetty Chats. I'm an undergraduate psychology student at Tufts University, and I believe psychology isn't just for therapists or researchers. It's for everyone. In each episode, we'll explore a new topic related to psychology and how you can apply what you've learned to your life in a fun and accessible way, with no pressure to optimize anything. So thanks for tuning in, and let's get to chatting. Before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the passing of Professor Summers last week. He was the head of the psychology department at Tufts and was also my intro to psych and social psych professor. He was my very first guest on Chetty Chats way back in 2023 before I revamped Chetty Chats. And he was just such an incredible person who had such a great impact on me and so many students. And I'm very, very grateful to have gotten close to him and have him on my podcast. And my thoughts are with his family and friends. Yes, but now moving on to the podcast today. I'm excited to be doing this podcast because I took a break from making an episode last week because I was on my spring break, so it's been a while and I've missed it, so I'm very, very excited to record today. Today I'm all by myself, no guests. And I thought what I would do today is read a Tufts Daily article that I wrote last semester about it was called The Problem with Perfection, and I guess you'll see what it's about when I read it. But I'm going to talk about two things. Like, in the article, I talk about two things that I did that were meant to help you optimize, but I think may be harmful in some ways. And then after I read the article, I'm going to go give some other examples about things that try to make you optimal that I think may be harmful, and just go into more detail and talk about some general themes and takeaways. And so this article I wrote, the Tufts Daily, if you don't know, is a Tufts student-run newspaper, and I'm part of the opinion section. So I wrote this as an opinion piece that was published December 10th, 2024, and it's called The Problem with Perfection. So here it goes. And also, when I was writing this, I was feeling quite metaphorical. And don't mean to caveat my work, but there you go. Okay. With December coming to a close and the headlights of 2025 racing toward us, many are beginning to think about their New Year's resolutions. Some of us will be vowing to hit the gym, eat healthier, or spend less time on social media. While these common goals are valid and attainable, the idea we should transform ourselves into our, quote, best possible versions, unquote, is both damaging and impossible. The mindset of personal Personal optimization is not just an issue during New Year's. We live in an age where self-improvement is seemingly everywhere. An atmosphere of optimization feels as if it's closing in, attempting to morph us into something we believe we should become. Displayed proudly in thousands of bookstores with over 20 million copies sold is Atomic Habits, a number one New York Times bestseller by James Clear. Clear advertises the book as a revolutionary way to get 1% better every day. While this sentiment is optimistic and well-meaning, the notion that it is best to improve every day poses serious risks. Aspiring to attain optimality strips our lives of spontaneity, fun, and our very human nature. One thing Clear instructs his reader to do is organize their morning routine into good, bad, or neutral habits, with the directive to categorize your habits by how they will benefit you in the long run. This exercise is intended to increase good habits and eventually eliminate bad ones. As I read this section, I was unsettled. These sorts of practices can make us obsessed with the validity of our actions and how they might affect our future, eliminating our potential to live in the moment. It is impossible to be present when we're trying to decide if it is good, bad, or neutral to put peanut butter instead of jam on our toast. Attempting to predict which option would bring us closer to perfection minimizes the beauty of the now and the reality that, oftentimes, what we do is really not that deep. Spending 5 minutes on your phone before you get out of bed may not be good in the long run, but that doesn't mean it is inherently bad. I see another potentially dangerous self-improvement tool from a quickly growing company called Whoop. Whoop is a wristband designed to be worn 24/7 that tracks a variety of health metrics such as heart rate variability, sleep, and stress. Whoop's website says Whoop will track every step of your health and fitness journey to help you perform at your best. 2 years ago, I wore a Whoop and became obsessed with the idea of optimizing myself. I was convinced by the notion that to live my best life, I needed to follow the steps Whoop told me would make me the best version of myself. I saw my daily recovery scores go down when I stayed up late or missed a few days of exercise. Consequently, I began to say no to experiences that brought me joy, like hanging out with friends late into the night or spontaneous outings that would replace a workout. I saw my recovery score remain steady, but felt the happiness being wrung out of me like water from a worn-out towel. According to self-help methods like Atomic Habits and Whoop, something fun, spontaneous, and fulfilling may be a bad habit or lower your recovery score, therefore preventing you from becoming your best self. However, spending the afternoon sitting around talking with your friends may just be enjoyable in the moment and may not do anything remarkable for you in the long term, and that is okay. Not everything is a means to an end. Trying to behave as though everything you do should be beneficial strips the wonder away from our messy and imperfect reality. Best selves are not created by following a manual of doing good and avoiding bad. A best self is subjective, ever-changing, and in many ways just a figment. Self-improvement is an essential part of life. Learning strategies to increase productivity and be healthier can be extremely valuable. Still, we must be careful not to take these entities as gospel and remind ourselves that spontaneous fun with no positive end result is perfectly acceptable and should be embraced. We are not robots meant to be optimized. We are faulty and chaotic humans who can be dumb, lazy, gross, and disorganized, and that is truly beautiful. Okay, that is the end of my article. And now I'm going to move on to some of the things I talked about and just go into more detail about it. So the first thing is Whoop. So if you listen back to season one of Chetty Chats, before it was even called Chetty Chats, back in 2023, I did an episode where I talked about Whoop, and back then I was obsessed with Whoop. I was still on the Whoop train, and right now, this is not a Whoop hit piece. I'm just like a little bit more critical of it now. So yeah, as I said, like Whoop tracks health metrics and you wear it on your wrist. There's no, it's not a watch. It just connects to your phone and you can see the metrics on your phone, and it is used to calculate your, recovery score, and based on your heart rate variability, sleep, now does stress, even though it didn't do it back before, and, gives you, guideline of how much you should exercise or prioritize rest. And I think Whoop can be incredibly useful if used in right ways. Lots of people have said it has helped them, and there are some things it helped me with too. Like Whoop helps you learn about what affects your body and helps you learn patterns. For example, many people know already that alcohol is bad for you, but actually seeing your recovery score decrease from drinking can help people realize like the actual effects alcohol is bad it has on you, and make you adjust your drinking to be healthier. And like someone I spoke to, he said that he didn't realize how marijuana affected his sleep so much, so then he stopped smoking as much weed before bed. So, and for me, what I learned from it is that doing really, really intense cardio lowered my HRV for the next rate. And HRV is heart rate variability, which is like the variation in time between consecutive heartbeats. And usually you want a higher HRV, higher is better. And it's affected by lots of things. So I realized I could perform cardiovascularly better one day if I didn't do an intense cardio workout the previous day. And so that like helped me try to rotate my cardio strength days more. And I also learned about like breathing exercises, how it improves my HRV, and and encouraged me to do more breathing exercises, which helps me feel more calm and helps me go to sleep. So I did learn things from Whoop, but I learned that I shouldn't be taking all the things Whoop is telling me about patterns like as the gospel, because if I think about these patterns as like the ultimate perfection, and if I follow the patterns to make these things perfect and my life will be perfect, that is actually unhealthy. Like, for example, I remember being so uptight about my sleep score and I was at my friend's house watching a hockey game, and then I was like, oh, I have to go to bed, my sleep score. And even I wanted to stay and I wanted to watch the hockey, but I just, like, I was uptight about it, so I left. And I, so I learned that now, like, just making, like, that pattern perfect is, like, decreasing my quality of life. And, for example, even though, like, these days, sometimes, like, I try to run and swim on different days, but sometimes life gets in the way and I have to run and swim on the same days, and those are both cardio workouts, and that is, it would have been better if I split them up, but sometimes there's other things that, like, I'm prioritizing. For example, I want to swim with my friends for I'm on the club swim team. So if I wanted to perform at my best optimally, I would have swam at a different time, probably an earlier time, because our practices are late, but socialization is important to me. So I am not following the perfect pattern of recovery and following some, like, slightly different pattern. And I think that overall is better for me. So I learned not to follow, like, one specific pattern to perfection, because balance is important and you can't have a perfect everything. So it's, for me, it's important to not choose, like, one thing to try to make perfect, like, not try to make my recovery score on my Whoop perfect, to find a balance. And this balance, it doesn't mean, like, everything has to be perfectly balanced, like physical health, socialization, sleep. It's not like everything has to be balanced all the time. This relates to what I was talking about with Tina in our entrepreneurial mindset episode. It's like the balance of things goes up and down, and sometimes I prioritize some things over other, and it's good to find what to prioritize based on what's important for you at that moment. For example, socializing fulfills me quite a bit, so I want to find time to spend with my friends or my teammates. But for some other people, they may be more of an introvert and they don't need to prioritize that as much. And what I prioritize changes as my goals change. Like, for example, when I ran my half marathon last year, I was like, the week leading up to it, I was at my friend's, like, week-long birthday party in the Scottish Highlands, and we were all, like, talking. Usually, like, they were going late into the night, but then I was like, no, my half marathon's coming up, I want to perform optimally at that, I'm, like, going to go to bed early. And if I hadn't had, and I, like, left them to go to bed, and if I hadn't had that race coming up, I would have stayed talking with them, but I knew what was important for me at that moment. Basically, what this is like, their patterns can be good and bad, like, depending on the situation. So, like, and where you are in your life, and depending on, like, who you are as a person. So take patterns with a grain of salt. There's no such thing as a perfect pattern. Just, like, know when to you don't need to perfectly know when to prioritize things perfectly. It's more just, like, think about what you want, what you need from your life, from what you're doing, and go with it like that. And and, like, even, like, with drinking, for example, even though physically drinking is always bad for you, it's not to say you should, like, never drink. And I'm not encouraging drinking. If someone, like, generally doesn't want to ever drink, and that's, like, that's fine, perfectly for them. But if someone does want to let loose a little bit, or, like, get drunk or whatever once in a while, that may fulfill them up in a more social way. And that's also important for some people for some time. So, yeah, take patterns with a grain of salt. Know when to prioritize different things. Okay, so that's Whoop. Moving on to something I didn't talk about in the daily article, which is my little obsession with eating for blood sugar. And this happened, let me explain some things first. So a CGM is a continuous glucose monitor. And this is a device a lot of people with diabetics wear. And so let me just like give some background. When you eat many things, but especially carbs, it turns into glucose, which is like sugar, in your blood, and it makes your blood sugar rise. And then insulin comes in, like the hormone insulin, to make your blood sugar goes down. And carbs get converted much more easily into glucose than proteins and fats because of a whole host of reasons I'm not going to get into. But this is why, and type 1 diabetics, they don't produce insulin, so that's why they need to wear a continuous glucose monitor and inject insulin to like track their blood sugar. And then type 2 diabetics release insulin, but they're just insulin resistant, and that's just like a whole other thing I'm not going to talk about. But how this relates to me I don't have it diabetes or pre-diabetes or anything like that, but last year I wore a CGM, and this is because of, I was inspired to do this based on this influencer type thing called the Glucose Goddess. That's her like Instagram public persona name. She's a French biochemist, and she has, her whole thing is like eating for your blood sugar, and she wears a CGM even though she also doesn't have diabetes. And what she says, and this is true, is that like true in like to a certain degree, is that like eating to control your blood sugar, because you don't want all these spikes, you want it to be more level, is helpful for your mood, for your hormones, for your satiety, overall health. And some of the tips she gave was be mindful she said that like eat carbs last, like eat veggies first, then protein, then carbs, or if you're going to eat carbs, eat them with other food to help, and that helps reduce the blood sugar spike. And she also gave some other tips, like she's like never, she said that she never eat dried fruit, because when you dry fruit or juice fruit, like she only ate whole fruit because it would change like the structure and take away the fiber, and fiber helps reduce your blood sugar spike. So all these tips, and I was like really obsessed with her. I wore a CGM, I tracked my like eating and blood sugar stuff, and I'm a lot more critical of it now. But I used to think, similar to when I thought that my recovery score, like having a perfect recovery score would make me perfect, I thought having like the most stable blood sugar would make me perfect, like would make my life perfect. And I put so much emphasis on that aspect of perfection. And even though I'm very, very critical of it now, I'm not saying that like trying to eat for your blood sugar or control your blood sugar is all bad. And this is also coming from like a non-diabetic, non-pre-diabetic like stance. There are like some helpful things I think you can take away from these tips to a certain extent, but no, I don't think to the point of like actually wearing a CGM. I mean, like you can't buy a CGM over the counter in America, you need a prescription. You can get one over the counter in Canada, which is how I got it, but like in America you need a prescription. And I think that says something about like maybe people who are not diabetic or pre-diabetic should not be wearing these, but okay, whatever. And then, and I'm no scientist, but I'm just a girl who had developed some bad habits based on this. So that's my sense. And I think you can get some good things out of these tips. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But the Glucose Goddess, around this time last year, like by this time last year, I was like, yeah, like this is like, I should not be like following this so intensely. And she got a lot of hate around this time last year. I saw like on the Instagram, all the comments were like, this is terrible. And all the dietitians were like, why are you like telling people not to eat dried fruit? Like, this is cray cray. And then I think in response to that, she did start saying some things. She got a lot of hate because she made this like pill that you're supposed to take before eating that was supposed to reduce your blood sugar spike. And She got a lot of hate in the comments for that. And then she, like, a few days later, she posted this thing. She's like, oh, I'm just eating a croissant for breakfast because it's not all about your blood sugar all the time. And I think that may have been in response. And then I don't, like, follow her at all anymore. But in preparation for this episode, I checked her Instagram. And she does seem to be doing better at telling people to eat carbs. Because before, I used to think eating carbs were, like, the devil before, like, when I was following her. Because she was like, blood sugar spikes are the worst and carbs cause blood sugar spikes. So it was very obvious, like, a takeaway from that would be to never eat carbs. But she is better at saying it's okay to eat carbs now. She's like, she said, quote, and also sometimes I just want to eat an entire tub of chocolate ice cream before bed, and that's okay too, because you can't always do the right thing for your glucose levels. And so that was, I guess, a good thing she said. But she also said, regarding some, like, sports, she was like, it's good to eat glucose while you're, like, doing sports. And I was like, yeah, like, good for her. She's saying that. But then she also says, like, but it's the same effect if you, like, swish around glucose in your mouth, like a sports drink or something, energy drink, and then spit it out. It's the same effect. And I was like, okay, girl. Like, maybe it is the same effect, but you're kind of, like, making people think it's okay to not actually swallow carbs and just swish them around and spit it out. So, and recently she also did say, quote, I never eat dried fruits. So that is... It's a little suspect, but, and also it's just, like, I think her whole thing is worse than Whoop, because at least with Whoop, like, I actually think Whoop is a good, like, for the most part, a good company. It's just, like, you have to be careful not to take it too seriously, but for Whoop, the stuff that it's saying is, like, true. It is saying, like, if you go to bed late and get a bad sleep, your recovery will be worse. If you drink, your recovery will be worse. Like, that is all, like, true. But the thing she is saying about some of this glucose stuff is just simply, like, not true and not healthy. Like, for example, she said eating honey is not a health choice. It is, you should only eat honey, like, if you, like, want to eat honey. It's the same as eating sugar. And that is just simply not true. Like, from a blood sugar standpoint, it is, like, they both spike your blood sugar at the same amount, because the glucose molecule in both is the same. But honey also has a lot of health benefits, like the antioxidants, prebiotic stuff, and so it's just not true. She puts so much emphasis on the perfection of the, like, blood sugar. Like, that's the most important thing. That is the thing to optimize that. It, like, she's, I think, blind to, like, all the other parts of life and health and nutrition. So, and also, like, from a sports nutrition standpoint, eating carbs is very, very essential. And she says, like, yeah, like, if you eat carbs, like, it's good. You should always, like, clothe them, like, eat protein before. But, you know, if you're like, running half marathon, marathon, or just, like, not even such long distances, but just, like, running, it's good to... Like, it is good to, like, fuel with protein before, but, like, if you're, like, in the middle of running, you need, like, fast, quick carbs. You're not gonna, like, oh, I'm gonna go on my run and have a chicken and then have my shot blocks, my, like, energy thing. So it's just, like, it's just so one-sided that it's crazy and just not true. And then also some of the things she says is she's like, okay, this is really turning into a glucose goddess hit piece, but I'm passionate about it. But she says that, like, oh yeah, like, putting butter on your bread is better for reducing your blood sugar spikes. Like, you should do that. And I guess it is true. If you put butter on your bread, it's better. It reduces your blood sugar spikes more than just eating bread by itself, because, like, the fat, like, mixes with it and helps reduce it. But then also, like, from a cholesterol standpoint, eating butter with bread is worse. So it's just, like, it's the same thing as, like, the Whoop thing. Like, know what you want to prioritize at what times, and you don't need to prioritize that specific thing at all times. It's more about finding a balance. And what I'm saying is, there are some tips that I learned from the glucose goddess that I still do take. I'm just not as neurotic about it. For example, if I go to the dining hall and take things on my plate, I have a mix of carbs, a mix of protein, a mix of veggies. I do eat the veggies first and the carbs last. And that does help reduce my, like, blood sugar spike later on, which helps, like, keep my energy level stable. And I think, like, that is something good I learned about her. I'm just, like, I'm just saying it's good to take these tips with a grain of salt and not let it overconsume you. Like, for example, if I go to a restaurant and then how we're ordering courses and pasta dish comes before the protein dish, I'm not going to, like, be like, okay, I'm not going to eat this and everyone else eat it and then I'm going to wait. Like, no, like, it's not the same thing all the time. Because it's just, like, it's what I'm prioritizing at different moments, and that's okay, too. That's more like it. It's what it should be. And then also, yeah. And then when I'm running, it's just, like, long distances, it's just, like, pure carbs. And but then even unrelated to sports, unrelated to, like, a physical health standpoint, sometimes I just, if I'm walking on the street and I see ice cream and I want ice cream, I'm gonna eat the ice cream. And then there's probably no health benefit, physical health benefit from eating that ice cream. You could say, like, but physical health doesn't need to be the priority all the time. It's also, like, food for the soul. It nourishes my soul. So there you go. And yeah, that helps me. So, and yeah, so now, what the takeaway is, like, use pattern for information. Like, I know my blood sugar will be more stable if I eat veggies before, and I use that information to help me in many occasions. But I know that following that pattern to perfection all the time is not good for me overall. So use patterns for information, but not, like, try to follow them so perfectly. Find your balance for all sorts of health, physical, mental, emotional, all that stuff. It's all important. And yes. And what is anything else about it? No, I think, yes, I was. And I have my little notes here. And oh my gosh, why don't I just pause the recording? That's so silly. Okay, hold on. Okay, I'm back. Basically, what I was saying was that, like, for when I'm thinking from a physical health standpoint, it's not, like, eating for blood sugar is not physically healthy for me or for anyone in every single instance. So, like, within the categories of physical health, emotional health, it's different for, like, different occasions. Like, for example, I was saying how, like, socializing is good for emotional health, but sometimes you have to prioritize sleep for your emotional health over socializing, staying up late and socializing. So it's all, so there's nothing perfect. There's no one thing to prioritize that would make you perfect all the time. It's all dependent on context, who you are as an individual, what your goals are at that time. So yeah, think about balance, and not one thing will make you perfect. Perfecting one thing, there is no one thing you could perfect to optimize your life. Okay, so moving on to Atomic Habits, which is I also talked about in the Tufts Daily article. So the Atomic Habits, a book, I started reading it over the summer, and by the time I started reading it, I had already, like, gotten over my Whoop and CGM phases. So I was already a little bit skeptical of things relating to optimism. And TBH, I did not finish the book and don't remember too much about it. So I'm not going to speak so much about it. I do remember there were some good things about it. I think, like, the methods for forming habits was beneficial from there. But I'm just going to speak about about the stuff I was more critical of in the daily article. So it talked about how there are your categories in good habits, neutral habits, and bad habits. One thing I did like about what the book was, he did say that there are different, some habits could be good for some people and some habits could be bad for people. I did like that. But for still, like, organizing habits to always be good, always be bad, always are neutral for, like, one, even for, like, an individual, it can still be kind of maybe harmful at some times. Like, for example, if I had to organize, like, for me, scrolling on Instagram Reels as a good habit, bad habit, or neutral habit, like, I would say sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's neutral. Like, I can't I can't organize it into one category for all the time. Like, for example, if I really need to like lock in scrolling through Instagram reels, I would say that's bad. But sometimes it's good to laugh. Like, sometimes they can be funny, and I think so that would be good. So again, finding the balance is key. And I also think you should not always like strive for a perfect balance either, because like striving to have a perfect balance for all your patterns or habits, whatever, is also trying to do something perfect, and that's bad. So yeah, so like you're like, well, how can I try to not have perfect habits while also making my lack of perfect habits not perfect? Like, it seems like contradictory, and like it is, but I think it just is more about just like live your life and know it'll all be okay. Like, still, like, think about your health, think about your priorities, but also just like live and it will be okay. And this kind of relates to the idea of the good enough mother, which I learned about in my parent-child relations class last year. So the good enough mother is a concept created by Donald Winnicott in 1953, and he was a British pediatrician and psychoanalyst, and he observed thousands of babies and their mothers and came to realize that babies actually benefit when their mothers fail them in manageable ways, like not like abusing or neglecting them, but like little things, like forgetting to, like, I don't know what the example is, like forgetting to pack their shoes for something, I don't know, like small things. And this benefits then like mothers who always try to be perfect, who are so like neurotic about being perfect, perfect, perfect all the time, because, and this relates to their mothers or any primary caretakers or caretakers in general. Because if they fail them in like tolerable ways somewhat regularly, they can learn to live in an imperfect world where there is bound to be imperfection. So with how it relates to like this whole not trying to be perfect all the time thing, is that you know that in the world, not there, like, it's impossible to do one thing perfectly all the time. So if you don't try to do things perfectly and just like try your best, like try your, just like live your life, when things go awry, like no, it'll be okay, and that will help you like with your mindset. And like, for example, knowing that the good enough mother allows a child to like navigate the inevitable imperfections of life, and that, and in like in a no, sorry, my words, in a good, in a, like a beneficial, in a health, in a healthy way, knowing that it will give you more confidence to just to live your life without trying the pressure to optimize everything, because you know just living your life and making mistakes will be beneficial for you. And it's not to say like you should make mistakes because that's beneficial. It's just like, and it's not like purposely making mistakes. It's just having mistakes as they come, and not even mistakes, just like allowing things to not be perfect all the time. Does that make sense? Oh my gosh, yeah, I hope it makes sense. Like even for this, like for example, this podcast, like I'm like tripping over my words a bit and stumbling around, and just knowing that that I'm giving lots of examples and explaining things, so you guys like probably you will probably understand, even if I'm not being the most coherent, and like being comfortable with that and accepting that is helping me. And because I know like I'm prioritizing, just like with this podcast, it's about like having fun and like educating you guys, and not about like saying the perfect thing all the time. So like accepting that and embracing that is helping me, and hopefully helping you guys maybe have a good laugh at me. So yeah, okay, the final thing I'm going to talk about in this episode is dopamine chasing. So dopamine, like I've said in the Valentine's Day episode, is the feel-good hormone and the motivation hormone. And so dopamine chasing is when you do things to quickly get dopamine. For example, scrolling on social media, you get hits of dopamine so easily because you're not putting in effort, but you're just getting the dopamine hits every time you see like a new video or a new post. And this can be harmful because your baseline for the things that like bring you pleasure or will go up the more you have easy hits of dopamine without without what's the word? Effort. Because it's not like effortful to scroll on social media. And also, so when you scroll on social media a lot, your ability to get joy from things goes down because your dopamine baseline is higher. And it's also easier, it's harder to be motivated to do things like get out of bed, start work, because your dopamine baseline is higher. So for a couple of years now, a few years, I've not kept Instagram and TikTok on my phone. Like, I don't use TikTok anymore, even though I was addicted to it. And Instagram, I still use. I don't keep it on my phone unless for certain occasions. Like, for example, this past week when I was in St. Andrews, I brought it back on my phone because people, like, DM and stuff on there for communication more than here. Like, I don't. So I had to bring it back on my phone to communicate with my friends in St. Andrews. And I think taking Instagram off my phone and, like, not having TikTok has been extremely beneficial for my mental health. Like, when I, like, over winter break, I also brought Instagram back on my phone just so I could, like, look at reels because I didn't have homework and stuff to do. And I noticed after just a few days, my, like, general mood was lower because my baseline for dopamine was higher. So I think taking them off my phone was a really good choice. And also, I noticed my attention span really decreases when I have it on my phone and, like, scroll. So it's a good thing that I did, but also, like, will continue to do in moderation. Like, sometimes if I want to look at reels on my computer for a bit, I will, but I'm mindful of when I do it. But last semester, I also started highly restricting the music I was listening to for a few reasons. One was the dopamine thing. I think, like, for me and music, I tend to, like, skip through music really, really quickly because I just, like listening to the same thing over and over again. But because I listen to the same thing over and over again, I get tired of the music, sick of the music easily. So I'm just, like, skipping through songs till I find one I like. And that is, in a way, is dopamine chasing. And also, I wanted to give myself more time to listen to podcasts and listen to audiobooks. So I started really restricting the music I was listening to. I would only listen to music on weekends and Wednesday morning because Wednesday morning I had running really early and I had to use music to get out of bed. And I think restricting music this much was good in some ways because it did give me more time to listen to audiobooks and podcasts, and also was good for my dopamine stuff. But I also think it was probably a little too neurotic because, for example, one of my friends was like, oh, I think you like this song, but I, like, would not listen to the song until Wednesday morning. So I think I stopped doing this, like, whole music thing only on these days because, like, sometimes it's nice to just, like, if I want to listen to some music, to listen to music. But I also am keeping mindful of it, like, of my dopamine stuff. Like, if I catch myself, like, scrolling through music, a lot of stuff, I'll be like, okay, like, stop. Either, like, pick a song and listen to it, or listen to something else, or don't listen to anything at all. And I still try to go on runs and exercise mostly without listening to music. Sometimes, like, more with running, I'll be more inclined to listen to music. But, like, with strength training, I am either listening to nothing or an audiobook or a podcast. And I think that is also good for my dopamine stuff. And I will still do that. And also, I stopped doing the, like, scheduled listening to music on weekends and Wednesday morning because I was listening to Andrew Huberman about dopamine, and he was like, oh yeah, even if you have a schedule for it, it still, like, increases your baseline for dopamine. So he, like, suggests before, like, exercising or whatever, rolling a dice to see if you're going to listen to an audiobook or a song or nothing. And I think I haven't done that. That also, to me, sounds kind of neurotic about dopamine stuff. But I mean, I think maybe I will try it, and I'll do another episode on dopamine later. And I'll do some dopamine experiments on myself and see if that is, see if that will I do. So if that, like, does anything. And then, so basically, yeah, the takeaway from this little segment is, it's like, it's the same thing as the other things. I'm just, like, giving a bunch of examples, like, saying, I know patterns are good in some way. Like, I know the pattern of listening to music or scrolling through social media, like, really, really quickly is bad. It tends to be bad for my mental health and motivation and concentration if I do it too much. So I am not as neurotic to restrict completely on certain days or at all, but also just mindful of it. And I think it's important to be mindful of these patterns, but not like make it your whole world. And yeah, so going forward, if I make a rule for myself, I think very hardly about it. I think rules should not just be like, this is a rule and that's the way it is forever and ever and ever, for always and always and always. I think, especially if they are like about being perfect or optimal, because that has led me down like bad paths in the past. So think hardly about rules. And I think like there is like sometimes where like rules for yourself are good. Like, for example, I have a rule for myself where if I'm at a dining hall, I'll eat at least two different kinds of vegetables just for like nutritional diversity. And I think that's a good rule. Like I will not give up that rule, but it's not like a rule forever and ever. Like if I'm at home and I only have one type of vegetable to cook, I'm just gonna let it slide that one night and like eat that one vegetable and not like be like, okay, now I'm gonna go out to the grocery store just so I can like eat one more vegetable for tonight. For some people that may be okay for them, but for me, like, I have other priorities. I have school. Like, I'm not gonna go all the way to the grocery store just for one night. So I'm not saying you should never ever have rules, but think about your rules and if they like are going to help you, or if following them may hurt you. Following them, so like all the time. So yeah, so, and then everybody is different. Everyone has different goals, priorities. Everyone has like different needs. And in addition to everyone having different needs and priorities, everyone's needs and priorities differs based on where they are in their life. So that's like the advice I would give to you. Know that trying to do one thing optimally will most likely not work out for you and your overall health and well-being. So know that everyone has different priorities, everyone has different needs. I've said that a million times, but it's true. And yeah, like sometimes it's okay to break your rules. And yeah, and then so yeah, no, there are good patterns and bad patterns, and like good patterns and bad patterns are not always good, always bad. Usually, like, for example, I think there are some like actually bad patterns you can do. Like, I feel like if you do heroin every day, I think that's objectively a bad bad habit, bad pattern. You should not do that. But or like heroin at all, not just every day. But but for most things in the world, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, and trying to categorize them as good or bad is in my opinion not good, which is weird because it's like I'm saying you should not categorize things as good as bad, and doing that is bad. But so it's just like, it's kind of like contradictory, doesn't really make sense. But that's the thing, yeah, it doesn't make sense. Just live your life. Nothing makes sense, the world is fake. Yeah, never mind, lol. Okay, so yeah, that is what I'm doing. Just like, live your life. There's no such thing as optimization. Trying to optimize something is not good. And that is the problem with perfection. Roll credits. Thank you all so much for tuning in to Chatty Chats. Thank you for your curiosity, and see you in the next episode.